Hello and welcome to The Nerd Alternative, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy. I'm Ram and this is Ram's Rambles, a series where I document the books, games and films that feed my art, soul and thoughts. This series isn't about reviewing art and assigning subjective ratings, but as someone who loves to understand why certain stories work for me and the lessons they leave me with, I hope you'll join me as I explore some of the art I can't stop rambling about. Let's get into it. Anyone who knows me knows that narrative games are my shit. I've always viewed animation and games as a superior form of storytelling, two mediums that continue to consistently innovate and boundary push in ways that books and traditional film and television can't always keep pace with. Having started 2023 with my first proper JRPG, I think it was fitting to end the year playing my first CRPG, and what a ride it was. Baldur's Gate 3 is one of those gaming experiences that has altered my brain chemistry and will likely be one of the nominal games I think of when someone asks me why I like games. Before I get into the gameplay and story, I want to go on a little tangent, so if you want to get right into the thoughts, you can skip through this. In my episode about Persona 5 Royal, I mentioned that a lot of games have the audacity to call themselves RPGs but fail to focus on the role-playing elements. Now, I'm no gaming academic or professional, but I do think that there's a big difference in my play experience between games like Mass Effect and games like The Legend of Zelda. As an OG Sims player, part of me has always conflated role playing with aspects of control that I like about simulation games. Being able to have full control of a character from the way they look to how they act and how the story progresses. Something I hadn't thought about is how complicated that gets when you also have to consider combat and narrative. So let's start with some definitions. What is an RPG? According to Techopedia, a role-playing game, also known as RPG, is a genre of video game where the gamer controls a fictional character or characters that undertake a quest in an imaginary world. That sounds simple enough. CRPGs as a genre originated in the 1970s as an interpretation of the pen and paper tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons as well as Warhammer. However, as Techopedia goes on to explain, the genre is quite a complicated one. Since the first emergence of CRPGs, such as The Dungeon in 1975, which is by the way the oldest playable CRPG, to nearly 50 years later, there's been an explosion of subgenres. One Masterclass article breaks it down into seven types. Video game console RPGs, single player RPGs, massive multiplayer online RPGs, action RPGs, sandbox RPGs, tactical RPGs, and roguelike RPGs. It's also worth noting that Western RPGs and Japanese RPGs have also been differentiated from quite early on due to the access to different computers and therefore different processes. I think what's interesting about the different types of RPGs is how they all come back to that simple definition, even if they don't quite fit neatly into the types of RPGs that I think are best encompassed by the term. Yes, The Legend of Zelda may always have you playing as Link, and there's more focus on the combat, but it is a game where you control Link, who is undertaking a quest in an imaginary world. The same goes for League of Legends and also Disco Elysium, all vastly different games who fall into the family of RPGs. So, all this to say that playing Baldur's Gate 3 helps me to identify that single-player RPGs with decision-based narratives and a visceral world is what my RPG vice is, which I already knew. But more importantly, I think it reminded me that it's important to allow genres to grow. As long as they're able to find their way back to their origins, to the things that made them a mainstay in the gaming industry in the first place. Now that my tangent is over, let's get into it all. Baldur's Gate 3 is a successor of the well-loved CRPG franchise, which was initially developed by BioWare, with the first Baldur's Gate being released in 1998 and the second Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Shadows of Arm, released in 2000. Both also had their own respective expansion packs. There were several spin-off games that followed in the early noughties developed by Snowblind Studios and Black Isle Studios, as well as enhanced versions of the original duology developed by Overhaul Games in 2012 and 2013 respectively. I bring this up because while Baldur's Gate 3 is enjoying newfound popularity and success, the franchise has had a long history of influence, including popularizing pausal real-time combat with Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. I wanted to highlight this because as a new fan, I think it's always important to pay homage to what came before. Baldur's Gate 3 was developed by Larian Studios, which, like all the best things, was founded in 1996. The game was released on Early Access in October 2020 on Steam and GOG, with a full release on the 3rd of August. Like I mentioned in my intro rant, in creating Baldur's Gate 3, Larian prioritised both innovation of the genre but equally paying homage to all the games that came beforehand. The game spent 3 years in early development responding to fan feedback and building based on these responses. They also maintained the spirit of previous games and also D&D 5e, which the game models itself on. I think this makes it pretty clear on how it gained such critical acclaim and popularity amongst old fans and new fans, and we haven't even gotten into the story or gameplay yet. As usual, I won't be getting into deep story spoilers, though Baldur's Gate 3 is a bit unique in the sense that you can't really spoil the entire game. With branching narratives that change based on character decisions, the race or class you pick, and the order in which you play the game, no one playthrough is exactly the same. All the friends I know who play the game have had vastly different experiences, and that's part of what makes it so fun. You can opt to play one of the 7 origin characters in the game, including a mysterious origin story called The Dark Urge, or, like most of us, spend 13 hours customizing your own unique badass self-insert who can do things you could only dream of. The main storyline is relatively simple. At the beginning of the game, you have been abducted and infected with a disgusting tadpole that will inevitably turn you into an illithid, aka a mind flayer. You and your companions, should you wish to have them, are tied together by this unpleasant fate and must set out on an adventure to cure yourselves before you turn into a baby Cthulhu. Along the way, hijinks and mischief ensues, and boy can it get chaotic. Initially, I was quite overwhelmed with the task at hand. Also, warning, I will say overwhelmed a lot. When you're dropped into Faerun with all these characters of varying scales of morality, it's hard to know what to do next. But once I threw myself into it, there are a plethora of tales to follow. As someone who loves stories, I don't know if you could tell, there's so much that this game has to offer, and I kind of view it in two parts. The first part is the story you want to experience. There's so much freedom in what you can do and how you can respond, and the consequences that come with those actions. You can quite clearly forge ahead with your own morals and ideas of who your character is. But like all things in life, sometimes things just don't go your way. With major decisions being determined by a dice roll or how proficient you are with certain skills, occasionally things go left. You might have wanted to talk yourself out of that fight, but because you've rolled a 1, you've now offended that ogre and you're gonna have to get your hands dirty. Or you wanted to go invisible and steal that gem, but whoops, you failed a stealth check, so straight to jail for you. What I loved about this balance is that you never go through the game feeling like you've got it all figured out. And sometimes you're genuinely caught between a rock and a hard place, which makes the stakes feel all the more real. I had moments in the game where I genuinely had to stop playing and spend an evening away from the computer to contemplate what I was going to do next. The second part is, of course, to do with the companions. Each is fully motion captured and voice acted by a talented cast of actors who I have to give their flowers because of how integral they were to the characters. These are Will, a human warlock played by Theo Solomon, Lizelle, who is a Githyanki fighter and voiced by Devorah Wilde, Shadowheart, a half-elf cleric brought to life by Jennifer English, Astarion, a half-elf vampire rogue played by Neil Newbon, who won Game of the Year for the role, Gale, a human wizard voiced by Tim Downey, and Karlak, a tiefling barbarian played by Samantha Beart. There are also 4 other potential companions who I won't mention because of spoilers, even though one of them is my favourite. These companions are the heart of the story. And I know it's cliche to say it's not the destination, it's the journey, but with this game, it's true. These companions each have their own backstories and questlines which you can fulfill, allowing you to get to know them better and understand why they are the way they are. Like seriously, who doesn't want to know why Will is such a golden boy, or why the hell Shadowheart is so damn snarky? You build your relationship with them based on an approval rating which can go up or down based on your actions. And it's not as simple as being good or being bad. each character has very specific standards. For example, Asterion is fine with you allowing innocent people to die, but being mean to a cat? The sheer cheek. Even the romances come across unique. Of course Will is going to propose to you with an acorn before you can go to third base. And of course Lazelle is going to challenge you to a duel to show she likes you. Like, duh. I always say that an indication of a well-fleshed out character is how easily you could write a good fanfiction about them. And honestly, all the BG3 companions fit under that categorization. Real credit to the writers and the actors because they come across as such real people, with nuances, insecurities, and histories which just adds to the rich tapestry of BG3's expansive story. Having started 2023 with my first JRPG and ending the year with this CRPG, I made myself the rule that I can only play 2 RPGs a year because I played BG3 for a whopping 138 hours, not including my co-op playthrough, and though I have no regrets, I need to pace myself better. I thought I had conquered turn-based combat after Persona 5 Royal, but I was gravely mistaken. Playing BG3 is like combining the precision of turn-based combat with the creativity of Breath of the Wild puzzle solving. You have so many options at your disposal, and because all of your companions have vastly varying abilities, you have to think carefully about how you approach each encounter before you even draw your sword, staff, or whatever the hell weapon you use. Sometimes you get taken by surprise, but I learned the best approach was always proceeding with caution. Even if I was attempting to talk, or in the case of my tiefling fighter, intimidate my way out of a situation to save resources, I would place other companions in advantageous positions just in case negotiations turned sour. Now, I will say that encounters can be frustrating, especially at the start of the game. If you aren't familiar with D&D or turn-based combat, the adjustment period can be a little painful. Battles can take a really long time, especially if you're fighting loads of enemies. Honestly, the first goblin camp fight nearly took me right out. But I promise, if you push through it, it becomes really fun, especially when you start to understand your class and what your playstyle is. For example, I was a tiefling fighter, so I would always position my character in the front lines with someone like Karlak, who is a tiefling barbarian. I'd place Will and Shadowheart somewhere high or on the edges where they could provide magic support and AoE damage out of harm's way since they weren't that good at melee or had lower health points. The game also really rewards you for thinking outside of the box and taking note of your environment. Yes, you can shoot that chandelier and drop it on the enemy standing under it. If you shoot a puddle with electricity, you will electrocute the person standing in it. The world is your oyster. Beyond combat, there was plenty of questing to be done and characters to meet. I think my one note about this game, which could turn some people off and at times overwhelmed me, especially since I have to do everything, is that the world is so big and there's so much to do. This is a good thing, but I think it does mean that you can get turned around or easily confused. For example, the map doesn't fill in the way that I've experienced with other games where you unlock a whole area. Instead, as you explore, you see more of it. Which is fun, until you get confused about the dark areas of the map, which could just be mountains that are physically inaccessible, but could also be the swamp you didn't get round to visiting. Do you see what I mean? I also found that sometimes I was unsure about when a quest would be resolved, which made me uncertain about moving into the next act. There are some quest lines which you start in Act 1 that don't get resolved until Act 3. In hindsight, this made the story feel more natural. In real life, things don't wrap up in a tidy bow, but when I was playing the game, this sometimes did leave me worried that I'd miss something in Act 1 that I couldn't return to. These are little kinks though that didn't really bother me in the grand scheme, and something really encouraging about this game is how Larian are still updating it, making it better and easier for players to have an enjoyable experience. Like I said in the beginning, Baldur's Gate 3 altered my brain chemistry, and outside of the actual game and some of the magical moments it left me with, I think the biggest lesson I learned from the game was more about its real-world impact. There's been a lot of discourse about Baldur's Gate 3 and its impact on the wider gaming industry. I was so pleased it won Game of the Year because I think games that trailblaze are exactly who should be winning these awards. I started with a ramble about RPGs because to me, Baldur's Gate 3 redefined so many things for me, including how I view the genre. It showcased how you can continue to innovate and push an industry forward, all whilst keeping a community at heart. You can feel the love of all those involved in the game, but you can also feel the feedback of those early access gamers. There's a buzz within the game that also lives outside of it. Gaming is and has been blowing up as an industry, and whilst games and consoles get more and more expensive, some could say that the customer experience is getting poorer. I'm not going to call out any games in particular, but I'm sure a few come to mind when I say that we are getting games that overpromise and underdeliver, ones that come out unpolished and buggy, or put their workers under unbelievable demands to meet unreasonable deadlines. We deserve better than that, and Larian shows us that we're not crazy for thinking that. If an indie studio can make a game of this caliber, there's no excuse. This isn't to say that every game needs to be like BG3, but that spirit, passion, and genuine care for their audience should be. Well, what's the point? Baldur's Gate 3, like its characters, is by no means perfect. But who needs perfection when you have so much to offer the world? Thank you for listening to this episode of The Nerd Alternative. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a rating and a review. You can find more of us on Twitter at The Nerd Alternative without the E after the N, Instagram and TikTok at The Nerd Alternative, as well as our YouTube channel. Peace out until next time.